Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra. Joining me is Jesse Hall. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Yeah, good to hear. Again, coming off a win, hoping for another win. Already beat this team before. It's, another NFC North battle this week. Here we are, week 14, going to Detroit to take on the Lions. Which, I mean, to me isn't that bad of a road game. We're one to talk because the Lions' record in Lambeau is better than it should be. But we'll say Ford Field is, if anyone who listened all the way back to, I think we did a decade recap episode way back early on in the offseason. And favorite Rodgers throw was one of the topics. And mine was the Hail Mary against the Lions on that Thursday night. And so the sight of that, Ford Field, Packers travel there.
Yeah, I mean, division foes, so don't take them lightly, but even last year where we never led in regulation both games, go in and handle business. That's what it should be. It should be a business trip, go in there, take care of them, do what we got to do.
And I also think that the way that the next four games are set up, it's interesting. I kind of almost look at it as you can even divide it two and two for a certain offensive philosophy, I'll say. At least I kind of see it. But I think, again, this was one of the Packers' more convincing wins. And I mean, I think things looked really good the first month of the season. So all four of those wins, I mean, the Saints win wasn't convincing in the sense that they didn't put them away because it's the Saints. I mean, the current number one seed in the NFC. So it was always going to be a close game, but convinced us that they could win that type of contest. And that was in New Orleans, right? That was on the road?
Sure was.
So, I mean, no fear of playing in that building, I don't think, and no fear of playing in Ford Field either.
2020, right? You know, weird season. Not a lot of people, if any. We travel good in domes. We always, the Rodgers era, I think domes are, he does fine there. I don't know. It's not going to be where we're at. That's the problem right now, I don't think.
I feel pretty convinced that the offense is just going to be able to operate however they want to in this game. The defense really had no answer last time. Not much has changed. I will say they've probably made the biggest improvement they possibly could by getting rid of Matt Patricia, because I do not think that, you know, and I mean, okay, just a little, slight rant here. I mean, I've ranted enough about Detroit coaching and Patricia included. He's the third head coach fired this year. The other two, Bill O'Brien and Dan Quinn, far superior head coaches to Matt Patricia. It's not even close. I mean, they've both coached to playoff success. And I'd argue Bill O'Brien, if he was still just the head coach of the Texans, he wouldn't be fired right now. He's only fired because he's the worst GM we've ever seen. That's why he's fired. So it's nothing to do with coaching. So if you think about it that way, it's really just Patricia and Dan Quinn that have been fired as head coaches. And again, Dan Quinn has led a team to a Super Bowl, didn't win it, came close, but still, he's shown success. Matt Patricia took a team that was successful and has just tanked it completely. And this is probably going to be their best season. I mean, I think six wins last year, they're only one away from tying that. And I mean, they've got, four games without Patricia, so they're better suited to do it. But it's baffling to me. I think he legit was probably the worst head coach in the NFL. I know everyone wants to bark on Adam Gase, and I don't think he's a good head coach either, who probably shouldn't have even deserved to have this job. I mean, he's done far worse than he did with the Dolphins, because he did lead the Dolphins to the playoffs one year. Yes, Jay Ajayi, Ryan Tannehill played incredibly well, but it was still Adam Gase coaching, right? So, they've all shown to be competent head coaches. Matt Patricia, nothing. And, I mean, I think, I wonder if nothing else, Bob Quinn was fired because he completely failed at maybe A, firing Jim Caldwell, which I've gotten on for so long, but B, you know, compounding that decision with an even worse decision to hire Matt Patricia. So that's done. So my whole rant to say, is the defense going to improve without him? Did you notice that last week against the Bears?
Not really. That Bears game was kind of crazy, wasn't it? Nobody looked good in that game. Let's go that way. Both kind of struggled. Detroit's so weird. As much as I hate the Vikings, really dislike the Bears, I almost feel bad for what goes on in Detroit, because it's just been so long of sadness, right? Just been sadness there for so long. Patricia, just reading what former players and players were saying on social media, I know, yeah, that's not the way to vent, but he was hated there. Like, nobody liked him. Nobody liked how he ran this program. Like, It was a crap show, to say it nicely. So, and it's a funny thing. Every time a coach gets fired, coach/GM gets fired this year, they win the next week. So hopefully that's over with. But so move in Daryl Bevel, who I think knows way more about the offense and what he wants to do there. But as far as defense, I don't know. I think now maybe it was just a big weight lifted so they can be more free, but they don't have the horsepower on defense to stop us. When the best defenses can't stop us, now I don't want to be overconfident, but this Detroit team is just, it's not there on defense. There is just not enough talent to compete with any kind of offense that can score.
Think about the Colts, Bucks, they're right up there in terms of like efficiency on defense. And the Vikings have improved, and they've gotten better. Almost seems like someone at this point, I was listening to a podcast earlier, maybe trading away Yannick Ngakoue has made this team better. Maybe that was a trade they never should have made in the first place. In fact, they at least got something for it. It's kind of almost made them better without him, less reliant upon him.
I don't know. Maybe just the season went on a little bit and they got out of their funk, because that guy's a stud and he's killed. That's hard to say. I don't know. As much as I don't like the Vikings, they could win this week and it would be nice. So I'm just going to finish with that.
Oh, yeah. The enemy of my enemy, right? So looking at defensive DVOA, the Steelers are number one, minus 24.8% to the average. So DVOA, defense adjusted value over average. And I'm getting this from Football Outsiders. So Steelers are one, Saints are two, Bucks are three, Colts are six. Just to say, so Bucks, Colts, they're both top six defenses according to the DVOA. And the Saints are number two, and the Packers were able to operate pretty well against them. Maybe they've gotten better as the season's gone on, not quite what they were in September. So that comes across in the playoffs, could still be a tough challenge, not to overlook any of these games, like you said. That's a good comparison. Where are they? They're actually 32nd. They are the worst defense in the NFL, according to this. So, plus 13.5%. So it's not as if they're as bad as like the Steelers and the Saints are good, but it's still pretty bad. Who's closest to them as a comparison? 12.7%, the Jags. Although that's funny because it's, the Jags in 2 weeks have kind of gone to the brink against NFC North playoff teams in the Packers and the Vikings. So, something there brewing with the Jags.
It's any given Sunday. The Jags came to play. We didn't. So, those stats matter, especially at this point. But we just got to do us and do our thing. Because as you were pointing out, when we come to play the best defenses, we're going to get ours. It just seems like we get we get 30 points every week. Anything more than that's a bonus, right? It doesn't matter who we play. But then, if we get clunky or we get cute and we don't do what we do, it doesn't matter who we play. So hopefully we bring our A game like we do against the good teams and not our game that we brought against the Jags that week. So anything can happen, right? It's the NFL.
Sorry to go to the fantasy right away, but just as a comparison. I just did my fantasy rankings. They're on Full Press Coverage right now at Full Press NFL, Full Press Coverage NFL at FPC _FF for all that. All the fantasy stuff there. But just a quick glimpse. I've got Aaron Jones as the running back one. Adams is the wide receiver two. Rodgers is the quarterback two. Tanyan as the tight end five or six. I expect big things from all of them. And just because I don't think the Lions have an answer for any of them. Jones had a really great week the first time around. I'll be playing Jamal Williams in some leagues just as a comparison sake in the fantasy playoffs, because I believe that the run efficiency, especially against the Lions, will be so great that both backs should produce and should succeed.
Yeah, definitely. I was kind of breaking this down with my cousin earlier today, and we were both like, 30s. He's like, yeah, we just get 31. I'm like, I think I'm going to add on to that. Just a quick breakdown of this defense. They got two guys that can get pressure. That's it. Their interior, their defense is, oh my God, it's bad. Deshaun Hand, they had big, high expectations for. He's not getting it done. Danny Shelton is what he is. You know, he doesn't provide much as pressure to push the middle. We have Elgton Jenkins, right? So it doesn't matter who's in front of him. He's going to take him out of the game. But this defense has given up a league-leading 20 rushing touchdowns. Yeah, I think we can pass on him. And, you know, the matchups are terrible. I don't know who's going to cover Adams, right? It's not going to happen. But I think we can gash him running, too. This is just the week where, like you're saying, you know, Jamal Williams might be – I'd never talk fantasy. But what you're saying, he might get the carries and he's going to get his because this defense can't stop anybody running the ball. You can just beat on them, beat on them, beat on them, work the play action in, and what are they going to do? It's just – it sounds really bad. Like, you know, we're talking about the Packers playing a high school team. Okay, it's not that bad, but I think we should be able to, granted, breakdown. We still have to win our one-on-ones, but we should be able to do whatever the heck we want to do this week.
I think they stand a better chance on defense if they replace the entire Lions team with a different cat. Go to the Hamilton Ticats, the loaded defense that they were supposed to have in 2020. Obviously, there's no season, but man, there was tons of talent there. I mean, Delvin Bro is probably a better corner than anyone on the Lions. And I mean, he wouldn't stand a chance against Adams either. I'm not going to kid myself, but I would say Delvin Bro is probably better than anyone the Lions have now. Jeff Okuda is eventually probably going to be better than him, but not right now, not as a rookie.
Yeah, he's been awful. He just gets picked on, torched. Their safety is kind of the same thing. Like, and again, they beat the Bears last week, but they also gave up 30 points to the Bears. So, you know.
And two things about last week. One for both teams. And then we'll move on to the other side of the matchup, which I think is maybe where the true contest really lies. But so looking at the Lions, first off, I think, you know, both teams kind of... not a great coaching situation in Chicago either. One that may imminently be ending as well. I'm referencing that a lot this year. I've counted off. There could be as many as 9 head coaching vacancies this year. So, or next year, you know, at the end of the season, regular season for them. Because I mean, if they make the playoffs, you'd think they wouldn't, but maybe we'll see. But when, you know, teams in shambles and teams in, you know, neither. I mean, the Bears clearly have the better defense, but not necessarily playing up to that. Comes down to quarterbacking. It's a quarterbacking league, and even with a thumb, I'll take Matthew Stafford over Mitch Trubisky any day. And it showed there who's the clutch quarterback that's going to win his team the game. Stafford, and Stafford's done that throughout his career. I guess a career wasted, but I mean, he's had success, no playoff wins, unfortunately. But I don't know if I even blame him on that. Not like I would like Andy Dalton, for instance, with a loaded Bengals team who couldn't win playoff teams. Like that's something. You look at that, you look at those two kind of situations differently, and you kind of view those quarterbacks differently, fair and unfair to Dalton. But the thing with the Packers last week that was interesting to note, and this goes into their mentality, and it's of you know, the five best offensive linemen, right? But it also how that concept changes whether you're doing whether you're considering that as an in-game decision or going into the week practicing. I mean, so the three straight weeks we've seen Elgton Jenkins have to go to center. Last week he started there, but the 2 weeks before, mid-game change. When those occurred, they, rather than disrupt the entire line and what we saw last week and players in three different starting spots than what they were the week before and inserting the fifth lineman at right tackle, instead they just, okay, we're going to move Jenkins over and put Runyon in. So in game, they want as little disruption as possible. But going into the week with Corey Linsley on IR, knowing that he's out, knowing they go with Jenkins at center right away, suddenly Lucas Patrick played all the snaps at left guard, moved Turner over and put Wagner on, meaning, okay, if we got to go into a game knowing we'd rather have Wagner be playing than Runyon. So just it's interesting to see how they make that decision based on the timing of when they have to make the decision.
Yeah, and that's crazy to me too, because as good as Billy Turner's played, I wouldn't move him because, you know, we saw him at guard last year. He's a better right tackle, right? I mean, the dude's what, ranked number one in the league right now as right tackle. So I wouldn't mess with that. I mean, not questioning Matt LaFleur and what they're doing because it's working. But yeah, that was interesting to say the least how that went. And again, I think maybe a lot's to do with like Patrick's health and maybe they were worried that he might go out during the game or something. So let's, you know, start with this right away. And then we can bring in Runyon, who's like the perfect closer so far, right? Because the guy just comes in and doesn't really miss a beat. So it's not like he really needs to start. He just can come in whenever and he plays well. So it was interesting.
That's a good point. Good point, Jesse, actually, that knowing that, although I will say, I mean, yeah, dealing with the toe injury, he's on the Patrick's on the injury report again this week, limited practice Wednesday, but he played 100% of the snaps. So if it's affecting him, it didn't affect him enough to take him off the field. And I thought he played pretty well. I you know, it's tough tasks having to go against Fletcher Cox. He got burned once or twice pretty bad, but that's kind of that we expected that again against the D-line. You called it as the best defensive line they'd face all year, and I thought he played pretty well for the challenge.
Yeah, and you know, depending on like the toe too, you know, where it's like maybe switching sides, you know, relieves it a little bit, you know. They know a lot more than we do, but I just thought it was an interesting strategy to start the game, but it worked out well.
Two really good reasons why. I mean, to me, it was just, I was just thinking Wagner better than Runyon, right? Like that was the only reason I thought, but then you've gone into a few reasons of why that helps specifically Patrick. So good analysis. That's what we're here for. One thing we'll do is we'll switch over to the defense for the Packers now. Because again, I think this is where playing a really good quarterback in Matthew Stafford. I'm trying to think back to my rankings because I did rank all the quarterbacks they're playing before the season. I believe I had Stafford certainly in the top 10. I'm thinking maybe around 7. Down the stretch, these final four games, just knowing Stafford's injured, I'd go Tannehill just because he's shown how efficient he is, but I think they're both excellent quarterbacks. So both will be a challenge. We'll get to that in a couple weeks with the Titans, but to stop Stafford, the defense is going to have to be on point. In Alexander, we trust him against any of the potential receivers he's going to have to cover. We've seen him kind of take out Marvin Jones before. We've also seen him get burned by Marvin Jones or Marvin Jones produce against the Packers. So, you know, King's going to have to be, we've seen Stafford especially pick on King before. So that'll be something as well to watch. So what do you think about the matchup specifically regarding Matthew Stafford?
First off, Stafford has all my respect. That guy's tough as nails. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to complain. No, he's an NFL player, made good money, was the last of the rookie making it rich deals, I believe. But with all the changes that's always gone on in Detroit, that guy is tough. He plays hard. Don't sleep on him. Throw out, they never won a playoff game. They can't win games, so he's not going to win playoff games. But yeah, the guy's tough. So respect there. Number two, I just want to touch on before we go into all the matchups, is how it kind of, we didn't touch on this last week, how like Zadarius kind of talked about how the players kind of went to Mike Pettine and said, you know, let's kind of simplify this offense. Let us do us. And just, they went from being super heavy zone last week to playing more man coverage than any team in the league. Total respect all around. One, that Mike Pettine listened to these guys, checked his ego at the door, didn't take it a bad way, and kind of let these guys do what they wanted to do. And they, in turn, turned out getting pressure on the Eagles last week, 50% rate, which is insane because the NFL, like, win rate on defense is like 19, I believe. And they got a win rate at like 50. So that is kudos to them guys respecting each other, talking it out, trusting the players, coach, you know, listening. That is so cool. So I would like to see a lot more of that this week. Man up. Like you're saying, you know, we got Jair, who's rated the number one corner. I'm putting him in top five in the league, hands down. Let him go do his thing. Trust everybody else and get pressure. And it worked last week. I'd like to build on that.
I just think about, you know, and what more proof did they need, really, than, okay, they suddenly went to zone towards the end when they thought they were nursing the lead. And what do you know? Jalen Hurts gets his first career touchdown against him. Alexander, no less, right? In Alexander's zone against Greg Ward, of all players. Like, I get if it's Jeffrey, we've seen, you know, Alexander in tight man coverage against Jeffrey and touchdowns being scored there, right? So you don't blame it there, but it's Greg Ward? Really?
Fourth and 18, man. Yeah, it was just such a, I'm just going to, you know, package that one up and punt it because if it happens again, yeah, it's a major problem, but it just, yeah, let's forget about that play.
to a certain extent, I get why you would maybe primarily put Kevin King in zone, like have him play off coverage. It seems like that's where he's at his best. As much as he's a big, or at least a taller corner, not nearly as physical and great the press as certainly Jaire Alexander is. And I mean, and I also can understand maybe why you move Alexander in his zone if you're not as worried about a particular receiver and you just want him available to kind of make a play anywhere, because you'll see him run across the field to make tackles on the opposite side coverage and get there and make plays. So, you know, maybe a deeper zone allows him to do that a little easier. So I could kind of get the argument of why you do it in certain situations. To me this week, though, I think you're worried about the receiving game, two main threats, at least from the what the secondary has to worry about. You've got TJ Hawkinson and you've got Marvin Jones. The rookie Quintez Cephus is coming along. But if Kevin King has to be on him most of the game, I like that. I feel like Kevin King has played pretty well. He's avoided getting burned big this year. Maybe the way they've used him a little differently has helped that. But I guess part of it also, he also missed a big chunk of the season. So there's a big time where he wasn't getting burned because he wasn't on the field. Maybe our minds just how much time he's missed. We're not remembering the times he is there, but he seemed to play pretty well. I remember he was on Pittman, at least he was lined up on Pittman on that big touchdown against the Colts a couple weeks ago. But the way the zone was set up, it didn't quite seem like that would be his responsibility, but you almost kind of blame him because, well, no one else was there to cover him except Christian Kirksey. So, but you know, regardless of that, it doesn't seem like he's made massive mistakes at all. So I like Alexander to kind of, if they want to use him this game to just shut down Marvin Jones, I'm perfectly fine with that. Force Stafford to throw elsewhere, and if other receivers beat them, I trust the way Chandon Sullivan's been playing. Been so great, actually. It's maybe putting pressure on King, knowing that, oh boy, they may have a number two corner there. They can replace me. I might not get that contract. So players in contract years, play up.
The way the secondary is coming along, we have a lot of options right now. You look at Darnell Savage stacking successes with the picks where they're using him kind of as like a robber kind of deal where, you know, let him be a playmaker, let him go do stuff. Yeah. Take out their number, you know, take out Jones, you know, Hawkinson. There's a reason why he got drafted high, because the guy's talented, but you know, you try to throw over the middle right now with the way Savage is playing and you know, how we're, Raven Green being out might change a few things now. That might change the defense a little bit, but trust Martin out there, leave him in base, and let Savage make plays. I like our chances. I really do, especially if we can get pressure. I mean, you get pressure on quarterbacks like that, and you still can play some sticky man defense, we're going to get turnovers. You might give up a big play here and there, so be it. Make them beat you over the top, or you know, take away what they want to do. So we're going to score, right? So respect to Adrian Peterson. The old man still gets it done. He's got four touchdowns in the last two games, but he's not doing any big chunk runs. He's not killing anybody with 20-yard runs like he used to in his prime. He's averaging under 4 yards a carry. The other backs aren't really doing much. So make him beat you with the pass.
Oh, and I mean, I think DeAndre Swift, if he was healthy and not dealing with his illness and, you know, coming off the concussion as well, are those related? Who knows? But I think he would be a massive threat, probably bigger than Stafford, to be honest. And it'd be, you know, especially Swift in the passing game as a connection with Stafford. Like, that's maybe even the biggest threat. Now, how much does he factor in there? We're not sure. But obviously, I mean, he's, you know, ultra talented, and he's been kind of as the workload's been kind of getting there as the season's gone on. He's also been producing. They've been having success. I mean, again, they're almost at their win total last year. So he's obviously, he's not the only reason, but he's come in and had a positive impact on them in games where they're winning. So it's a good sign there too. And there was a while there was a point of the season where he was getting the goal line stuff as well. And it's kind of, you know, Johnson will occasionally get it, but it's been mostly Peterson now. I just, the way that Swift's been dealing with that stuff, it's probably going to be Peterson again this week. I could definitely see if they get close, him being able to punch it in against this Packers defense. It's unfortunately, even when they're playing good run defense, they're still susceptible to in short yardage situations. And I think that's where Peterson's going to be a big threat on, you know, third and threes. I don't know if they're going to be able to get off the field if it's Peterson coming at them. We'll see. Maybe the run defense steps up and impresses, because that is a big threat there too. It's Stafford with the big plays and then the short yardage stuff. It's the two extremes, really, and they've got to be able to defend both. So it'll be interesting to see how much they're nickeled because of the threat of Stafford, but how much they also want to impact the run game and really force Stafford's hand, so to speak. Again, dealing with the thumb injury on his throwing hand. He was limited. Swift was limited. Kerryon Johnson was limited, just to kind of run through that. Doesn't look like Kenny Golladay is going to play at this point. And I know I do a Monday night stream with Going for Two, although we did it on Tuesday this week. Thanks, NFL, for the strange schedule. But we have radiologist Dr. Jim Ferretti on, the fantasy sports doc, Jim Ferretti. And he basically, his opinion of it is, with him being held out this long with a hip injury, they're not just going to suddenly play him without practicing, right? So, like, if he needs to be basically full practice the whole week for them to trust him at this point. I mean, technically, they're still in a playoff race. Maybe Daryl Bevel thinking, man, if I could turn this around and go from get a half season Matt Patricia team to the playoffs, I'll for sure get a head coaching job. So maybe Bevel puts pressure on there, but I don't know that. I don't know. I just I don't think we're going to see Kenny Golladay, and certainly not in this game. But it might be still a while for Detroit.
Yeah. Would making the playoffs actually save anything right now at this point? I mean, you don't want to tank and lose games, but I know what you're saying. You're still in the hunt. You know, he's playing for his coaching career, you know, job or whatever. And do you want to be the head coach in Detroit? I don't know. But okay, I'll quit talking trash about Detroit, because for everything I'm saying, this team is tough and they do battle. They have beat some decent NFL teams so far this season. So I know I've been kind of dogging them. Maybe they don't have the horses, but these guys will fight. So you need to put them down early, because they will fight. I mean, they throttled really the Cardinals earlier in the year in Arizona. So they're a good team. They have a solid line. Like, Taylor Decker should or could be a Pro Bowler. And I know early in the year with my matchup with Kenny Clark, I was talking about Frank Ragno. That guy's a stud. Like, Kelsey was great last week. This guy might be number two or three, with, you know, Elton Jenkins in there too. But he's that good. He gave up 2 sacks last year. He hasn't given up a sack this year. I think he only has 1 penalty. The guy's really dang good. So Kenny Clark's not getting a break this week either. So yeah, as much as I dogged him, as much as, you know, this offense might not be sexy, or, you know, they don't get a lot of yards per carry, they can still do the little things, and they can do the things that keep them around, and they jab you. Well, guess what? You might be in the fourth quarter like the Bears, and then they're going to get the knockout blow. So it all goes back to the Packers doing their thing. I will say one guy that really impressed last week again is Kiki Kinsley. He is stacking success. Mike Daniels actually gave him a shout out on Twitter this week, you know, talking about how Mike's second year, he had 6.5 sacks, and he wants to see Kiki get 7 because he's getting close. So that is a huge praise from a Packer player that was really good in his prime. So I'd like to see him stack some success this week too, along with Rashawn Gary.
That might have been a career high for Mike Daniels, because, I mean, because I love Mike Daniels. I feel like they definitely shouldn't have released him that one year. Wait, that was last year, right? The year that they lost a playoff game by allowing 200 rush yards, you release your best run-stopping defensive end.
We're talking about that.
I'm always gonna be salty about that forever. So I love Mike Daniels, and it's a good sign. Can Kiki impact the run game as much as Daniels is? I think that's the real key. But obviously, yeah, if he can keep getting sacks, that's a good sign too. You want to nullify quarterbacks that way, and you know, provide impact plays that are negative to the offense. And of course, sacks are a great way to do that, but even just providing pressure. And, you know, last week it was a lot of, oh, that player got the sack, but there's like 3 guys there. I mean, he can get third sacks. I don't know if they count those as stats, but he can. I think Za'Darius is going to have to do what he does normally. I do wonder, and Preston Smith did play well, but it seemed like Rashawn Gary was the more impactful player on a play-to-play basis. Are we going to start to see the playing time flipped? I know Preston Smith still played more snaps than Gary last week, but Gary's getting up there into the, I think it was right around 2/3. So is he going to start to be more of that every down player?
Well, Gary got the start again, you know, but yeah, then Preston still got the more snaps. But the whole line as a whole, Dean Lowry, who has been a ghost and hasn't been good, had a really good game last week. So I don't know if this, you know, come to Jesus kind of thing, if you will, with them talking to Mike Pettine and just simplifying it and let us do our thing. Maybe that just inspired everybody and everybody's playing better. I mean, again, we didn't play a good line last week, so let's not act like we just kicked the crap out of a really good offensive line team. But if they do it again this week, you know, maybe we're peaking, maybe something's coming to fruition, you know. And with Preston Smith and Gary, that's a good problem to have if they're both going to be playing good football, right? You know, keep everybody fresh, make sure everybody can play good. You can try, you know, one guy goes out or you can move a guy around and do different things. Those are all good problems to have, especially coming down the stretch.
And I think that the most pressure on any position group this week is probably going to be at the linebacker spot. I mean, and I guess from a middle linebacker perspective, they're probably always have the most pressure anyway. They're getting the defensive signal calling. They're having to line guys up and really everyone's reading their player, but they're reading the offense as a whole and trying to figure things out. So that naturally the middle linebacker is going to have added responsibility, but especially if they try and run all three of the main pass rushers out or they're in dime, a lot of that is, okay, they're only going to play with one middle linebacker. And if that's the person who's tasked with covering, again, I think it's probably the biggest threat in this game is TJ Hawkinson. That's going to be huge. That matchup's going to be so key. I wonder if, do they maybe bring Amos down, especially if they're playing it in dime, bring him down to the line and he's almost more doubling Hawk, or you wouldn't nearly use him as a spy on Stafford, but just as a sort of freelancing type role. Like I feel like Amos might be key to that, but I think the way that they've shown with the linebackers they have, they've trusted those guys to nullify the tight end. So this will be another big game for Christian Kirksey, I think, in coverage.
Yeah, so I think you brought up the most interesting, you know, attack maybe the Lions will see and how the Green Bay is going to respond. With the Raven Green injury going down, we still have Vernon Scott, who has flashed, but he's a rookie, very raw. And now they brought Black up, who might, you know, actually get on the field again. I think he played one game early, but they re-signed him again. So what are we going to do, right? Like the Raven Green role, I know they played Kamal Martin more, where we saw two linebacker sets. And, you know, which I'm for, you know, the guy's full speed. So I like it. But when we get to the one where I think I've been really hard on Kirksey lately, where he kind of scares me out there, who's going to play that role? I know you're hard on Blackman, so I'm not even going to bring him up. But yeah, that kind of hybrid play, because we like to play three safety looks. Who's going to be that role? So maybe they bring Amos down, like you're saying. Well, then who's going to play on the back end? This might be a week you see a little bit more Vernon Scott. So that's the most interesting matchup right there, I think, this week.
Yeah, true. My initial instinct is, again, maybe because of how threatening Adrian Peterson can be, especially, you know, as we get close to the goal line, like you said, and really any short yardage type plays, maybe even any first down plays. Really, I'm just finding excuses for it, but just to just avoid dime packages, especially. I'm fine with Alexander, Sullivan, King on the field and Savage Amos, but, you know, try and keep the rest linebackers and defensive ends and work with that combination there. And I would, I don't know, and we'll see. Maybe the Lions kind of force the Packers' hand, spread it out, and force them to go into dime packages and things like that. But I would try and avoid that this week. Again, not the defensive coordinator for the Packers, so who knows?
And that's why I respect last week with them going to more man coverage. And, you know, they saw what happened and how we could man up. So guess what? You Lions want to do that? Cool. We trust all our guys out there on islands against your guys. Throw against Jair. I'll take that matchup. You know, you put King with, you know, a guy like Cephas or Danny Amendola, who has not found the touch at the end zone this year. I think Sullivan can shut his butt down. So, yeah, if they want to try to do that, let's man up and do it. So that's why it's fun, right? You know, it's a chess match.
A couple things I want to talk about before the end of the episode. Before we get to that, is there any aspect of this game else you wanted to cover, Jesse? Anything you feel between the two teams matchup that you feel needs to be addressed?
Yes. Fix the special teams. No more special teams blunders, please.
I got a feeling J.K. Scott's going to maybe need to work on his tackling a little better, too. But that's not the only reason, clearly.
Yeah, don't even get to that.
Okay. Yeah, don't let it get to that, please. Okay, so we'll move away from the Packers, because talk again about the Lions offense. Again, how Swift could be the biggest threat, how Hawkinson, I mean, it is all through Stafford, so let's not kid ourselves. Like, he is the engine behind that team, so it's all about neutralizing Stafford. What makes life difficult for Stafford? And it's going to be pressure, it's going to be really tight coverage, force him to put the ball in really tight spots, and he's a great passer, really accurate, makes really good decisions, so they really need to try and trick him and force him into really tough situations, because if they make it easy for him, he's going to expose the defense. And it's just, like you said, you feel for the guy. Just like you do, you almost feel for Lions fans. If they weren't division rivals, right? You'd actually feel something for them. You're as close as possible. it's not a very well-run organization. It really isn't. And from the top down, and maybe cleaning house, whoever they bring in as the general manager is going to make smart decisions, but you're still making that assumption. What does that leave Matthew Stafford as in terms of, you know, a future with this team? Could he potentially be going somewhere? I know the hot topic right now is Carson Wentz, and you look at his contract, it'd be pretty tough to move him. I know everyone's kind of tying him to the Colts and Frank Reich, and his best success came with Frank Reich, and you know, the logic behind that. But say the Lions choose to move on. First off, do you think that's imminently possible? I'm just kind of pulling up the contract now. Financially, it's doable next year if they really wanted to. Do you see that as something that's in play for the Lions?
What a fun topic. Off-season moves. Yes, I do. So, okay, you're the Lions. You've been run like crap since Barry Sanders was there in 98. So, and it was even crap when he was there. So new regime coming in, new GM, you field calls, right? I mean, I would. And I'm sure Matt Stafford would be all for it if, you know, he can go to a winner. You know, if a team, I just thinking off the top of my head, like a team like New Orleans or something like that, you know, because I don't think we'll ever see Drew Brees again, but that's just me. You listen, right? You listen to the calls. You listen, 49ers, you know, you listen to what they might have to offer. Heck yeah. You look at it, right? This team needs to be, the roster needs to be blown up. Why hold on to a quarterback, you know, that's getting to the end? I think he's what, 33? So he's not old, but why? Just try to start over, stack some draft picks, try to find your future guy. I guess the short answer is yes. I think it's the option's there.
But you're also saying you're not just outright cutting him. And I think so. If they've just released him, they save $10 million in cap space, but they still have a almost $25 million dead cap hit. So there's no way they're just going to cut him and still eat that much money. But
not going to trade happen.
But, you know, trade into a team looking for a quarterback. Colts seem, again, everyone has Carson Wentz tied there. The Colts do seem like maybe a logical destination for that. I think Stafford's better than Rivers. Certainly right now he is anyway. I think that's an upgrade there. You mentioned the 49ers. The Broncos, I mean, if they're really ready to fully clean house and whoever comes in as a GM says no to Drew Locke, or maybe John Elway says, yeah, okay, I messed up there. Give me another quarterback. I'm going with the veterans again. That's how I won a Super Bowl last time, right? So I feel like either way, I could see a push to get Drew Locke out of there, or, you know, maybe not even get rid of Drew Locke, but bring in Stafford, let Drew Locke sit behind him. Because the one thing with Locke, not that this became a Broncos show suddenly, his rookie year, I remember he got injured in training camp or at some point in training camp. I don't know how early or late it was in camp. So, you know, whatever the experience he had through the OTAs in 2019 and the offseason program and whatever training camp he had that, was on an injured reserve. And yeah, he's around the team, he's in meetings, he's learning, but to put it all together in the field and kind of really work that brain on the field in plays in those situations, he didn't really have that. First week off IR, he fully practices, he's out there, right? So he hasn't even really had a chewed up week preseason at all for his first NFL start last year. And then this year he gets hurt again. And so there's no real off season program for him to really get into it and improve. So maybe he just needs time. And the only way to give him that is to, is, is to actually let him sit for a year behind a guy like Stafford if you really wanted. And if you know the 49ers and or sorry, the Broncos, I meant. I'm projecting there with Garoppolo. But if you're the Broncos and you really don't like it after 2 years, you cut Stafford in 2022, and then it's the contract, the way it's set up now, it's a $27.9 million cap hit, but only $9.9 dead cap. So you save $18 million on the cap, and you just eat that almost $10 million. You can maybe afford to do that if you really believe in Locke and want to go with it. So the Broncos, another one, too. But yeah, it's just fun to speculate about getting Stafford out of the division, I think, is key, because the one I definitely don't want is if he goes to the Bears and a great defense, a we presume competent new head coach, and you know an organization that he can actually feasibly win playoff games with, suddenly that's a really scary NFC North team and opponent for the Packers. So that's the one I don't want to happen. Go anywhere else. Get out of the division, please.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Patriots could be, you know, a player too if they really don't like, you know, Cam Newton is basically a rushing touchdown machine, but he has what, like 8 TD passes? Who knows there either? So I think teams will call, or at least they'll dangle some bait out there in Detroit jumps, which, why not, right? I mean, you're not winning division next year or the year after. Why don't you, you know, start getting that draft capital, start rebuilding, hopefully, I mean, find a GM and a coach that can steer it in the right direction, which, of course, as Packer fans, we don't want to see that happen. But there's nothing to lose right now, right? They're not like they're in the running for anything. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting offseason up there for sure.
Patriots, that's a good one, yeah. And I mean, with Cam, I mean, they've got no ties to him whatsoever. This is just a 1 year contract. I mean, they could potentially franchise tag him if they want, but I mean, if they think Stafford's the better option, he's available, and can they'd rather probably just pay that, and then who knows? Maybe Cam goes to the Lions. I'm trying to think that as a run heavy team between him and DeAndre Swift, I'm threatened by that. But let's not worry about that. Let's worry about the Lions this week. It really the one thing I want to look at from this offense for the Packers is, again, I feel like I've been saying this all year. Divide the season into quarters, right? Amazing first quarter, second quarter 500, which isn't great for the Packers this year, but that's the worst stretch. Just the one loss, the Colts in the last quarter, and now again this quarter kicks off. Lions here, Panthers week 15, Titans week 16, and then the Bears finish things off week 17. I kept saying at the start of the year that might be for the NFC North crown. I get the feeling that won't be for the NFC North crown. Not to say the Packers won't have anything to play for at that point, or that the division won't still be open. But I just feel like if there's a division competitor, it's not the Bears. My initial thoughts, which looked like they were good for a bit, have now kind of, I mean, they've lost what, 5 in a row, 6 in a row.
Yeah, the North is ours, right? I mean, if we don't get it done, it's going to be epic failure. But it still might be worth playing for us too, because we might be playing for that number one seed. So. Hey, for the Bears, why wouldn't you want to be spoiler? So it's not like it's going to be even if it's not for the division or anything like that, if they can take us from a bye to, hey, you got to play, you know, as a 2 seed, why the hell wouldn't they come to play, right? So it's going to be a fun little stretch. Everybody's talking about that Tennessee game, and I think that's going to be the real, you know, game where, hey, can we stop the run? But that Carolina game is not going to be a joke either. That team can present some problems.
I mean, one of them is, can they stop the run, especially if McCaffrey's back? Because the last time they met McCaffrey, they couldn't, and they barely escaped with the win. I mean, and I remember that. Kudos to the defense for stopping McCaffrey on a fourth down run right at the end zone. Like, when they absolutely needed to step up, they did. But yeah, it wasn't great. but anyway, moving on from... So clearly, defensively, we're going to be talking a lot about the same things. Maybe less about the run in the Bears game, although David Montgomery is certainly respectable. And truthfully, the Bears may not, you know, we don't think they're playing for the NFC North title at that point, but they could still be fighting for a playoff spot. Things could, I mean, they're right in the middle of it right now. If they can stay afloat, that game means a lot to them too, more than just a spoiler. So they, you know, the Packers, I mean, really, and like you said, they want that number one seed. Their game back of the Saints, knowing they have the tiebreaker, they just got to keep up. But right now, it doesn't look like the Saints are going to lose, even without Drew Brees. Oh, imagine that. And so they need every win they can get. And the Lions technically are still in the playoff race too. I suppose mathematically the Panthers are. But even if they're not, still a really tough team. You know, a coach that's trying to establish culture. And, you know, part of that is wins at the end of years when you know you're not playing for playoff games. And you know you're out of it, but you still got to come in and work. And that's part of that. So you know that Matt Rhule's going to push that team hard. But so I think defensively it's going to be a challenge really all 3 weeks. Again, less the Bears, but that's more to do with the quarterback play gifting us some mistakes, as always. Unless he learns between now and then. Maybe the biggest development of Trubisky's career comes now and he's actually a really difficult opponent to face. I think offensively, though, there's a bit of predictability. Predictability. I divide this quarter of the season in two. These next 2 weeks, Lions, Panthers, I think our defenses the Packers can really run against. To the point where they're going to just control the clock, run heavy approach. I want to see, you know, 30 carries, you know, 15-15 between Jones and Williams. Like, really just run on these teams if you're capable. Obviously, if the, you know, the run defenses step up and you have to change that, so be it. But I really feel that's the approach to take with those two teams because, you know, and I think maybe could do that against the Titans to a certain extent, but you know it's going to be really tough against the Bears. I feel like the Titans being an overall better team, and I don't have much faith in their ability to stop Derrick Henry. Just because it doesn't, I mean, most teams can't. And I mean, really, the only reason the Browns didn't even really stop him, they just scored so much last week that he wasn't on the field. That's basically what the Packers have to do to stop Derrick Henry. So to me, that game and the Bears game are two where they're just going to have to throw a lot. I don't want to see even 15 carries. To me, when the matchup calls for passing, I'm okay abandoning the run. I'm kind of on that side. Do it enough. Do it in the situations where it's advantageous. Like, you're not running on first down against the Bears, I don't think. You run on, okay, you got a good first chunk, and it's second and three. That's a good situation to run on them again. I'm good with those types of things. But to just try and run down the Bears' throat on every first down doesn't seem like it's the best way. That, you know, you've got Robert Tonyan, who's an exploitable matchup, especially against the Bears. Frankly, they've got Buster Screen defensively, who's an exploitable matchup. So, and I think just again, the Titans, I just expect needing to score so many points that, again, I'm run heavy approach these next 2 weeks, and the last two, I think it's pass heavy and really gear up to the playoffs, in which I expect they're going to have to play a lot of good teams, regardless of if they get that bye or not. It's going to be tough matchups throughout. So, that's kind of how I view these next 4 weeks. Do you agree or disagree, Jesse? Anything you want to ramble on endlessly about on these next this last quarter?
So I don't disagree with a lot. What I'll add to it is the sweetest thing about Matt LaFleur's offense is he tries to make everything look the same, but you can do like 20 things out of everything you do, you can do like 20 different plays out of it, right? That's the Kyle Shanahan, the Shanahan tree. And I think LaFleur's taken it to a new level now where this might look like this. I was watching some stuff last week, and he had like 9 plays that all looked the same, exactly the same. And they're all different plays. It was unreal. It was beautiful. And now the next 2 weeks where we're playing not the strongest fronts, sure, try to run the ball. Try to see if you can establish this run. Try to do some things that, hey, maybe down the stretch, if we need to pull it out and do it, it'll work. But then let's start working the play action off of it. We might have to pass against some of these better fronts. How can we disguise this? How can we show this? With Tyler Irvin, it sounds like he's going to be out for a while. This is where you mix in Tavon Austin. I'm not going to say he's going to be the game changer like Andre Rison was back in the glory days. But if he can run a few jet sweeps, if he can be out there as a decoy, if he can do these little things where they have to respect it, that's going to open up so much more of the playbook again. It's just wonderful that we're going to see this offense going. It's like Bill Belichick, right? Week to week, you can attack teams with a different kind of strategy and you can make it work. Throw out the Mike McCarthy years where it's like, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do ISO routes all day long. And if it wins, it wins. And it won for a long time. But then all of a sudden, when defenses started saying, we knew what they were running before they even ran it, man, that sounds bad. Well, now it's like, dang, we see this play, but we don't know what they're running out of it. That makes you deadly. And that makes you a real threat to every team in the league. So, it's going to be fun down the stretch. It's going to see how we match up against teams. I just hope they keep you know, the pedal to the floor. That's what I want to see.
I do think these 2 weeks, might, some of those aspects might be difficult. And you're right with Tavon Austin, because think about who runs jet sweeps for the Packers. Sometimes it's MVS. Maybe you see more of that. Maybe they do want him running less routes downfield and maybe you get Malik Taylor back into the rotation. Or Reggie Bangleton? No, okay. That didn't happen. But the other, I'm thinking of who else kind of runs that, Equanimee St. Brown. And while, you know, I've already referenced it, Irving and Raven Green, are they both on injured reserve?
I think Raven Green went to it, but I'm not sure about Irving yet. But I thought yesterday Raven Green went to it. So that's why I thought they brought up Black. So don't quote me on it. But yeah, Raven Green's out for a while. I don't know if Irving is yet.
Okay. Did not practice was Equanimee St. Brown. So someone who does, again, has that speed used. You want to get the ball in his hands early because there's, you know, a little bit of MVS there where he's dropping a little too much. But knee and concussion, didn't practice Wednesday. Obviously, we're looking for that. They released Darius Shepherd, so they don't have that option anymore. Jay Sternberger also out with a concussion. And that's maybe one of those keys to running those fronts. You bring in two tight end sets. Oh, run, right? That's the natural instinct to think, oh, it's the big heavy set. But Packers are comfortable passing out of those sets. You know, just it. It means more Tunyon, obviously, but it you know, Mercedes Lewis coming onto the field more. And while that's a good thing, you don't necessarily want to overdo his snaps either. So there's a couple of maybe key matchup things that are needed for that they may not have. So these next 2 weeks, it might be difficult. So maybe they do try and simplify it down, at least at first, and see, okay, do we have to, you know, the second half, is it a close game? Do they feel, okay, now we got to draw out some of those concepts where we are playing with things a little bit more and really trying to fool them, even though we don't necessarily have the personnel that we're fully comfortable doing those things with. So we'll have to see, obviously. I'm sure there's a Matt LaFleur has a great solution to all this. And, you know, certainly, again, much more faith than probably ever had in Mike McCarthy, but certainly the last decade or about half decade. So it's good to see that, like, he really is did the details among the better head coaches in the league. And yeah, he's got no chance of coach of the year this year because, I mean, I guess Tomlin's biggest case is probably going to be the 16-0 season. That's not happening. The Steelers lost. But for one of the best coaches in Tomlin for a really long time to have never won coach of the year, you might think if as long as the Steelers do well enough or can maintain a number one, or I guess with the Chiefs, maybe even a really good number two seed with a great record, he'll get it anyway. And if not, they always go to the first year guy in Kevin Stefanski. So it almost seemed like LaFleur lost his chance last year. It's going to be one of those things where he never gets the respect, but it doesn't matter, right? Like we know that he's certainly among the best head coaches. So we're happy to have him.
Like Aaron Rodgers said, you know, personal stats are nice. Let's get some rings. So I'm so over that. I get it. I look at debates all the time on the internet about who's the best, who's this, who's got this stat. You know what? I don't care anymore. It's all about getting that next ring for Aaron Rodgers. So yeah, whatever.
I mean, even Sam in the recap article, it's the Eagles game, is kind of hinting at the MVP race and does Rodgers have a chance at it? So my official take on the Full Press, our new Full Press NFL podcast, I think episode 2 was just, that's what I recorded part of with Ian Glendon. And talking about the Packers and the MVP race. And at the end, I was trying to find reasons to why just give it to Mahomes for this reason or this reason. It's like, I just don't want Rodgers to have it because MVP and like NFL MVP and winning the Super Bowl that year don't mix. Like, not just a Rodgers thing, but like anyone. Like, it like never happens. So I don't want to test fate. I don't suddenly think that this is the team that's going to break that. So I'm kind of hoping he doesn't get the MVP. Some other quarterback gets it, and then they could just focus on the Super Bowl, right? Because that's really all that matters.
You got that right, 100%. I have no problem with that. I don't think Aaron Rodgers does either. So, be the last team to win your last game, and that's all that matters.
Just give it to Russell Wilson. Just give it to Russell Wilson.
Perfect, yeah.
He's never got it. This is you. Just give it to him. I know he's throwing some picks, but just give it to him. I'm kind of cheering for the Seahawks to win the West just for that. That might be a way to give it to him. Or, you know, can Mahomes get 50 touchdowns? I think if he gets to that again, he probably gets it. So he'll be hoping for that.
Statistically, this might, you know, I think Aaron Rodgers might have the best, best, you know, touchdown interception year. If he can hit 40, and kind of stay where he's at, because what's his best? 45-8, I think?
It was 45-6 in 2011.
45-6. Okay. So he can only throw two more picks. So, but I think he can get into the 40s again, no problem. It shouldn't be a problem to get in the 40s.
All right. So we'll keep a track on the numbers again, the fantasy guy here, right? Of course I will. And if you want to keep track of anything, talk to us, feel free to reach out on Twitter at FPC_Packers. Jesse's at Hall_JHall1212. I'm at Senra Says. Everything related full press coverage you can get on the Full Press Coverage app. Download it for free on Android and iOS stores. Already referenced Sam's, we already referenced a couple of them. Sam's recap article, Jesse's Know the Full article. You can get those, of course, always on the Full Press Coverage app. Access to the podcast, the Full Press Radio Network. So download the Full Press Coverage app for free. Jesse, any final thoughts going into this Week 14 preview?
Go Pack, go!
Ah, yeah, familiar sound. Hope we're really cheering on for this victory this week. So, join us on the reaction episode of the next episode of the Full Press Packers Pod.